You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. People using social media often document some of the raw and devastating experiences of a California wildfire. Some of the most striking images of the campfire in Butte County that are making their way around the world have been taken by the award-winning Getty Images photojournalist Justin Sullivan. We have posted a link to his Instagram, but if you put those words on any search engine, Justin Sullivan campfire, you will be amazed by what you see. I'm very happy to have him in the studio with us today. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
Can you describe the scope of your experience with wildfires in the broad sense?
I probably started covering wildfires in 1998. Back in that time, they were much smaller than they are now and a lot less destructive. You're talking like, you know, a hillside somewhere outside of a city or something like that. But now the scale is just it's out of control. To see how something can burn 70,000 acres in 24 hours or less is just it boggles the mind.
What does it mean to you to embed in a fire or embed with the firefighters?
I don't typically embed with firefighters. I like to sort of explore, and I do it with a group of other photographers. We do it for safety reasons. But we like to just get right up to the front line and be there where the fire is, you know, the most active. We like that activity as far as for photographs. And it definitely shows the process of people needing to evacuate, the fear in firefighters, as, you know, these fires overcome them in a lot of cases nowadays.
Your coverage of the campfire starts with the evacuation. How did you get there so quickly? How did you get some of those earliest photos?
I was in Sacramento, and I got a text first thing in the morning, like 8:30 in the morning, from a text group that I belong to of people that cover wildfires, photographers that cover wildfires, saying, you know, this one looks like it's big. We're hearing a lot of scanner traffic about people being trapped. So from Sacramento, it was an hour and 40 minutes. Took off around 9, got there to the fire itself, maybe around 11:30, 12. And at that point, it was still chaotic. There's still a lot of scanner traffic about people being trapped. The hospital was on fire, and they were beginning to evacuate the hospital. We heard it over the scanner, but we couldn't get through Pence Road because it was completely blocked. It was pitch black, fire on both sides of the road. And we just kept listening to the scanner and thinking, we got to get over there. We got to get over there. We didn't actually know how to get over there. And a couple of police officers came by, and they said, hey, is this road open? And we're like, you know, we don't know because we haven't gone down because it looks too sketchy. And we said, if you guys go, we'll follow you. And we did, and followed them right through. There was fire on both sides of the road for about a mile and a half, wires down. We got through their side. The sun was out. Not the sun, like, you know, but it was actually light again because it was like actually driving through the night for that mile and a half. And got through their side, and just when we got to the hospital, they were starting to evacuate a wing of the hospital. Elderly people, putting in police cars, putting in the vans, people's private cars, pickup trucks, everything. They were just getting out of there.
This is that time frame when the fire had moved from burning 1,000 acres to 5,000 to 18,000. It was really exploding. And when you say we, tell me, what are you wearing? Who's with you? How much gear do you take with you?
I was with a photographer who's a freelancer for AP named Noah Berger, and we do a lot of fires together. We have a good working relationship covering fires. You know, we both know how to navigate. We both have fire history. And, you know, we come fully equipped, full Nomex helmet, goggles, fire shelter. We bring things to sleep in our cars because, you know, more often than not, these fires are in areas that don't have lodging for, you know, at least 50 miles away. So it's easier to always stay within the fire.
So CAL FIRE knows you through working on different projects. And I say there are specific members of the CAL FIRE agency that you know. Are you able to just go in and go wherever you want, as close as you want? How does access work?
There's a state law in California that allows members of the media unfettered access to natural disaster scenes, unless it's a crime scene or something like that. So, yeah, when we get to a checkpoint, we are able to use that law to say, you know, we have a right to be in there to cover this. And it is kind of at your own risk. I mean, obviously, you don't want to go to the front lines of a fire wearing shorts and flip-flops. You know, you should be prepared. You should have your training. You should understand how to get out of there. You should understand how to take care of yourself if things go bad. And you know, oftentimes they do, you know. I've had very few close calls, thankfully. Most recently, when we were on this fire, we were trying to navigate down a street that power lines had fallen down. And just when I walked away from these power lines that were already down, they fell a second time, literally like a foot behind me. So everything is very fluid in these situations. I mean, you have to just have your eyeballs in every direction at all times, especially when you're going down streets that, you know, are still on fire and there's lots of trees and whatnot, because they will come down.
Tell me about the campfire. How is it different?
This was the first fire that I've covered in my career where I got there so early that things were actually still really happening, like the evacuations, people being trapped. And the thing that was so remarkable to me is, like, everywhere we drove, I didn't realize that Paradise was, you know, a pretty sizable town. Everywhere we drove around that town, everything was on fire. Like, we didn't go down some street and it's like, oh, this neighborhood's saved. It was like everything was on fire. And if you drove by something, at one point it wasn't on fire. If you drove back an hour later, it probably was on fire because it was just raining embers everywhere. It was like literally like a snowstorm of embers.
And you stayed. You stayed over the next number of days. Your pictures tell the chronology from hours to days, the moments when bodies were being recovered, when people were finding each other in survival.
The body recovery thing is something I've never seen, because you're never allowed to cover that. You know, police and law enforcement, fire officials, they never let you see that stuff. Even most recently, the car fire was a good example. There was that a woman and her children or grandchildren that had died in the restaurant. We tried to get near that place the day that they were searching it. You couldn't get within 10 blocks of it. You know, just to even document the process that they were going through to get it. From day one of body recovery with this fire, not sure where this directive came from, if anyone's even thought about it, or if they just decided this needs to be seen. We've had zero resistance covering recovery of bodies. And I think it's shaped the story a lot differently than in past. You know, I think people would really hit home now that, you know, it's not just a number. These are actually, you can actually see what rescuers have to go through, you know, with their on their hands and knees, like clawing through someone's burnt down house, trying to find the remains of a person.
How has that shifted the work for you personally?
I mean, obviously we're not covering fire anymore. There's not really any fire anymore. It's not about the fire anymore. It really is about the rebuilding process. It really is about discovering where these people are. You know, are they going to be found? Some of them may never be found. You know, there's a story about a guy who has dentures. And, you know, if his body was burned beyond recognition, bones burned, there's not going to be any dental records or anything to find him. So he just might be missing forever. It's hard to wrap your head around that.
You're here today. There's rain in the forecast in a couple days, and there's a struggle of humanity happening in Butte County and, of course, in Southern California as well. What's your plan now?
That's a good question. I definitely have plans to be back up there later this week. I think it is one of those things we just need to step back from a minute and decide how we want to approach it next. There's still going to be time before, I mean, there are areas that are being repopulated currently, but it's not like in a widespread sense. I think they're very, you know, the less populated areas at the outside of town. But repopulation will be important to cover.
Have you needed to take a break too?
This weekend I just literally did nothing. You know, because I had come from covering the midterm elections in Texas straight home, got home Wednesday night, stayed the night here in Sacramento, and then the first thing in the morning is the fire. So it was like 7 days on the road already, back up, just right into it.
I guess I wasn't asking so much about like sleep deprivation as I see what's on your face as you're answering the questions, and I want to address that because it seems that this fire has sunken deeper maybe into you in a different way.
I imagine it has. I mean, you know, similar story I did a long time ago was Katrina, and for days, Hurricane Katrina, for days we drove around looking for people that had died, you know, and that's kind of what's happening here. I mean, there's a lot of people missing, and they're finding a lot of these people every day. And it is like that's the story, and that's the story that we have to pursue right now while it's still, you know, their main focus, than most people. I mean, I don't think the fire is the main focus anymore. It's how can we find these people? And we have to be there to show that struggle, show them doing that.
I was counting online, Justin, the number of sites and sources and publications. Your photos are in truly in dozens of outlets right now. Is there a hope that all of those pictures of this devastation, the blaze, the burning, the destruction, the blue body bags being carried out, do you have a hope yourself for what those pictures mean or do for the world?
I mean, I hope they resonate with people. I hope people see that and realize that this is it's a huge problem. This is a humanitarian crisis. I mean, we have a whole town that is gone and they have nowhere to go. And it's not like this is the first time this happened. This happened a year and a half ago in Santa Rosa. That's another community that's like, you know, out without a house, without anything, you know, until they rebuild, which is not an easy process. A year in, they're still like less than 20% of that town has been rebuilt. You know, I think this story has been covered very, very well locally, but nationally, I haven't seen a lot of it. And that's sad because there's other stories that are taking precedent, like the Malibu fire. And I'm not saying that the Malibu fire isn't a big deal. It is. All these things are a big deal, but this is huge. This is a really big deal. And I don't think that it's necessarily getting the coverage that it should. So hopefully these pictures resonate with people. Hopefully that, you know, inspires people to want to donate money or to do whatever they can to support, you know, these people that are really at their worst time.
Thank you for taking some time to come talk with us. I'm glad we've made the connection, and I look forward to being able to work with you again on your work.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That is Justin Sullivan. We've posted a link to more of his photos on our website, and he's easy to find everywhere online. And there's more coming on Insight on CAP Radio.